Hi, my name is Richard Cho. I cover Canadian communications for J.P. Morgan. I'd like to welcome Joe Natale, President and CEO of Rogers. Joe joined Rogers as President and CEO in 2017, and before that, he was President and CEO of TELUS. He joined TELUS in 2003 and has been in senior key leadership roles for Canadian communications for over 15 years. So thank you for coming.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me.
So to start off, since you joined Rogers in 2017, wanted to know what your top strategic priorities have been with an asset base of wireless, cable, and media. Kind of what are you focusing on these days?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, Rogers has a great set of assets, an enviable set of assets, and number one priority for me was to focus the organization on the continued growth and opportunity in the core business. We are the largest wireless player in Canada, the largest cable operator in the country. We have the most significant sort of media sports assets as a whole, and we've got a thriving enterprise business. So the asset collection is very good. Job one was focus on the core. Job two was keep driving financial performance and capability on that front. In the last 2 years, we expanded margins by 200 basis points, 130 basis points in the last year alone, and more to come on that front. So we continue to see good momentum. We have leading indicators, financial and otherwise, in the wireless business, and good sort of initial signs of growth and expansion, in other parts of the business as a whole. So that was really important. The second thing is a strong focus on customer service, and you saw that we hit record postpaid churn of 0.99 in Q1, the best postpaid churn in the history of the company. And we're seeing the double whammy of improved customer service and improved margin expansion because the two really go hand in hand. You've heard me say that in the past, Richard. So we're seeing that happen as a whole. Next is just investing in the right network and capability for the future of the business, investing in 5G and what that will bring to the future of the wireless business, investing in the Comcast Xfinity platform that we've now rolled out and are gaining good momentum on, investing in the growth available to us in the enterprise business, et cetera. And then lastly, really trying to drive the right culture and focus around accountability, performance, and the customer first and foremost. We just got back our engagement results, and we hit all-time record high engagement across 26,000 people of 85%, which is considered best in class by almost any measure. So really feeling that we're getting right momentum in the basics, and the opportunity ahead of us is as strong as ever before.
Great. Kind of to drill down on wireless, before we move to 5G and then eventually cable, but starting with wireless, 2018 was a very strong year in terms of adds for the industry, and for Rogers. 2019, it seems like there's been a little bit of a refocusing and pullback. Maybe the secular growth on just the pure sub numbers hasn't been as strong, but they're still positive, something that we're struggling a little bit more with in the U.S. But given the focus of the company, it seems like there's been a shift from just trying to get adds for ad's sake and a little bit more on the quality of ads, the driving of service revenue, and then that has kind of reflected in the churn and margin aspect of it. Can you talk through a little bit about what your focus on the wireless business is on the top line aspect?
Sure. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Richard. Our number one priority is in driving the economic foundation of that business. We're very proud of the leading financial economic indicators that we have as a business. Yes, Q1 was quiet from a loading point of view, but if you look at the metrics that really are at the foundation of the business, we got 33% of the growth in revenue in the industry, and we got 33% of the growth in EBITDA once you kind of normalize for some of the accounting changes that happen around capital lease accounting. as a whole. And the metric that we watch a lot is lifetime value. Lifetime value for Rogers was up 10% in Q1. And no matter how you measure that, if you measure that strictly as, you know, ARPU growth divided by churn, if you measure that, if you include the cost of acquisition and the cost of retention, or if you even allocate a number of the central costs, in almost every way you look at it, we grew lifetime value by 10%. So I think that's the sort of true economic engine of the value of that business. You know, loading in the industry more than ever is being accentuated into key selling periods. You know, I said to my team that, you know, the peaks are getting higher, and customers now more than ever are expecting, you know, promotional activity around the critical selling periods, whether it's Black Friday, whether it's before the holidays, back-to-school period, March Madness. There are these sort of, you know, 40, 50 days in the year where kind of it all happens. And in between, I think, you know, there are going to be quieter periods. And we are really focused on maintaining that discipline. And in the quieter periods, unless you really believe that you can spark the market and shift those critical peaks, I just believe that we're just throwing money at, you know, stimulating a market that is not ready to be stimulated. So, you know, we have an obligation to customers to kind of be there when they want to shop as a whole. We think there's great growth potential in subscribers in the market. Last year, as you mentioned, we had 5.7% growth in Canada in subscriber growth. Our models this year are 4.5% to 5%, so still strong subscriber growth. You know, don't forget, and in Canada, penetration still sits at about 87-89% versus 120% for the U.S. And there's no structural reason why we wouldn't continue to climb that penetration curve. You add to it the fact that we've got about 2% immigration growth in Canada, and that there's more and more opportunity to monetize the growth of data. Data is still growing relatively in a relatively strong way. The average Canadian uses about 2.5 gig of data versus over 8 for the average U.S. customer. So an opportunity to monetize that growth along the way as well.
So it seems like there's a long...
And ARPU, sorry, ARPU is still growing for us. I mean, we posted ARPU growth of roughly 1%, and that's a substantial contrast to our largest peers and competitors that, you know, the delta of roughly 3% between ourselves and our peers, and we continue to see opportunity in growing that fundamental.
Is that ARPU growth being driven by your plan kind of tiering, or is it increased usage of data, and how are you monetizing that increased usage, and how do you see that being monetized as you go from the 2.5 to a 5 higher rate?
I think it's a number of things. One is we've done a better job of keeping the customers that we have. So you see that in the churn number, and keeping especially the highest value customers in terms of maintaining their contribution to our economics. Second thing is around base management. We're just getting that muscle developed as a company and doing a better job of reaching out to customers as they reach end of promotion or end of a contract, and making sure that we have a great value proposition that meets the needs of the customer and does a good job of managing the ARPU and what it means to our base as a whole. And then just really working that up-tiering component. There are still, you know, a number of tiers within the base, whether it's from prepaid to postpaid, the low end of postpaid to the higher end of postpaid, the share plan construct, et cetera. So we're really happy with our ability to kind of drive up that ladder and that growth opportunity as a whole, and you'll see that reflected in our economics.
And I guess in terms of the kind of jump ball, call it, of that 40, 50 days of selling, Canada is still largely on a subsidy model versus the U.S., which has largely moved away from it. Is it more handset promotions that are being used to go after those customers during their selling days? Or do you still see kind of planned promotions that tend to reprice the base and create some of the service revenue pressures that generally want to be avoided?
I think it depends on the particular period. I think it depends on whether there's a new and exciting handset in the market that people want, in which case, you know, handset sales tend to spark the opportunity during that period of time. We have a subsidy-based equation, but effectively it's a form of financing that comes at different tiers based on whether you want to pay more and get, less of an upfront cost for the phone. And then some other periods, it depends, kind of where it goes. You'll see data bonuses come into the mix and data bonuses being attached to different parts of the base. We really look at the lifetime economics before we kind of launch one of those particular, strategies, whatever it might be. But then at the end of the day, those are critical periods, and you have to be on the ready for what might evolve, right? And as the largest player in the industry, I think we play an important role in, kind of driving through those promotional periods that, provide good value for customers but provide good economic sense.
And I guess this is kind of will lead up to the 5G discussion, but something that AT&T stressed earlier was how they're putting spectrum to work, and it's really going to increase their capacity. And I think we are seeing kind of on just the 4G basis the amount of data being used, and customers are adopting bigger and bigger plans. In the 600 megahertz auction, you purchased a significant amount of spectrum. Can you talk a little bit about how you see your current spectrum position and capacity, what the 600 is going to bring you, and I guess we'll move to kind of how you see 5G rolling out. But let's just start with the 4G aspect of it.
So we're really happy with the outcome of the 600 megahertz spectrum auction. There is, in the history of wireless, in 35 years of wireless, there have been three low-band, spectrum auctions as a whole. And I don't see anything on the foreseeable future that would, somehow magically create more low-band frequencies available to the marketplace. And low-band spectrum, as you know, is kind of the workhorse of the wireless network. I mean, it really is the capacity workhorse. And it has two features that really matter. One is it has the ability to traverse very long distances. And when you consider that Canada covers five time zones with a population density of about four people per square kilometer, distance matters. And there's no better formula for kind of valuing the importance of low-band frequency spectrum than in a country that's kind of shaped and geographically, dimensioned like Canada. Second thing is that 70% of the Canadian population lives in the major cities. The major cities are even more densely populated. I mean, you look at the number of condo towers going up in Toronto, it's kind of staggering. And the same can be said of the other major cities. And, given the less than perfect weather at times, a lot of Canadians live underground. As they traverse to work or make their way shopping, there's these underground sort of communities that developed. Well, 600 megahertz spectrum is fundamentally important, like other low-frequency spectrum, to kind of bust through, concrete, glass, et cetera, and really provide the capacity required as a whole. We're going to put it to work right away. As soon as it's released, we are ready to kind of deploy it across the country. And we think it just makes good sense. Go back to what I said a few minutes ago, at 2.5 gig of consumption per Canadian, fast forward the movie, at some point you might be sitting here in 5 or 10 years' time, whatever that might be, and we'll be at U.S. levels in terms of consumption or more. And as we get to that place, then this is going to be the spectrum that kind of carries the capacity at that extent overall is the workhorse, as I said. I think in terms of 5G, to put it in context of 5G, it's been tagged as the 5G low-frequency spectrum. Our view is that the 700 megahertz frequency will only come later in terms of 5G. It won't be readily available to 5G. So if you don't have any 600 megahertz spectrum, you're going to have to refarm 850. 850 right now in Canada is being used for 3G and for non-VoLTE voice services. So that means kind of simulating that base of customers, and that means, saying, hey, we need you to move. Here's a new handset, which drives COA costs, and disruption drives churn, so that band can be freed up for 5G purposes. So having 600 gives us what I've been calling sort of hopscotch spectrum, the ability to kind of be ready-made for 5G and then layer 3500 and millimeter wave on top of it. And that's the mindset. And you look at the players in Canada, you know, all except one have, you know, invested in the 600 megahertz for a number of fundamental reasons that I've talked about, and we think it's a great investment. It came in at $1.71 per megahertz per pop, which is far less than the $4.30 and change the 700 went for. We think it's of great benefit to our organization. I'm very pleased with the outcome.
And just so for, I guess, people who are unfamiliar, can you give us a sense of what's being used for 4G, and then how do you see your 5G kind of spectrum plan playing out? I guess you mentioned the 3500 and the 600. What else will be used? I know there's a 3500 auction coming, but the rules haven't been set. So kind of how should we lay this out over the next 5 years on the 4G versus migrating to the 5G?
So first of all, you know, we have been working to invest in 4G LTE advanced infrastructure for the last couple of years. We've been deploying a radio access network that is 5G ready. So as 5G capability comes along with Ericsson as our partner, we'll just light up those cell sites through a software upgrade, frankly, and all the hardware and the civil engineering work will have been done because we're replacing the radio gear as we speak. And it is compatible with both 4G and 5G. So that, there's an economy there that is significant and important to us. We invested in LTE Advanced late in the cycle. That's why you saw our CapEx intensity in that sort of 12 to 14% range versus 8 or 9% a few years ago. But what it allowed us to do is have radio gear that was 5G ready, as opposed to having to rip and replace the early LTE Advanced gear that came to the marketplace as a whole. So I think that's been a great move for us and makes it very kind of capital efficient. What you're going to see happen is we're going to use 600 to boost the capability and performance of that network and add capacity, ready-made for LTE Advanced, but also ready-made for 5G as the baseband. 3500 is going to come along in an auction, we believe, in about a year's time. In the next little while, we're going to hear about the outcome of the direction around that and the timing of the auction specifically. We currently have a significant amount of 3500 megahertz spectrum already. That spectrum has been tagged for fixed wireless in a 4G world. We'll have to give some portion of it back for re-auctioning. And then we'll pitch up at the auction and get what we need to kind of, complete the second of the three tranches. And then at some point in the future, there'll be millimeter wave auctions that happen. There's already a lot of millimeter wave spectrum that's been purchased or being deployed in the U.S. We hear about it from our U.S. peers as they've been deploying fixed wireless. None of that's been auctioned off in Canada yet. So, you know, part of your question is where does 5G go from here in Canada? I think the first real focus of 5G will be coverage, speed, and capacity as a direct evolution of 4G. And that'll happen with 600 and 3500. Eventually, as 3G goes away, we'll reform that A50 and make it available to 4 and 5G. But right now, there's still a substantial portion of the Canadian market that relies on 3G. And there's still a substantial portion of the market that has non-VoLTE voice. So that is not going anywhere soon, if you want it, from that perspective. I think the next major applications we'll see in 5G in the short to medium term will be in the enterprise space. So very specific vertical applications, kind of the natural extension of machine-to-machine or the IoT world, but with some of the capabilities around 5G, narrowband technology, longer battery life, just kind of the ability to have coverage and capacity on a broader basis across any application in a particular vertical, whether it's transportation, healthcare, smart communities, all the things that you hear us talk about. And then the long term we'll look at fixed wireless access. I'm kind of watching carefully to see what Verizon and AT&T are doing on that front. And then we'll look at some of the low latency applications that are out there with the advent of edge computing.
Got it. In terms of, I guess, the wireless CapEx spend, it seems like between the amount of 4G network spend that was done and now the spectrum purchase, it seems like you're in a good spot where you were not spending as much a few years ago, kind of ramped up. But at this point, do you expect to see it kind of moderating on kind of maybe holding firm on Canadian dollar basis, but down in intensity? Or do you think the 5G and kind of 4G rollout or continued rollout of the new spectrum will keep it at the higher level, or do you actually see it coming down?
In the short to medium term, you can expect it to stay in that 12 to 14% range. In the longer term, we'll see where this all goes and where it leads, but there'll be some moderating in the longer term. It all depends how technology advances or moves. Like, one of the things we're very excited about in terms of 5G is this whole notion of network slicing and the ability to create, you know, virtual wireless networks for specific applications, whether it's for first responders or for a port or a factory or things of that nature. And so there might be specific capital investments to go after very, you know, specific opportunities in the enterprise space. But I think if you're looking for what to model, I'd say model in the 12 to 14% range for the next few years, and then we'll keep you posted as we kind of make our way through that.
But you don't see it spiking up for any reason?
No, everything that we see says that you know, the evolution of 5G will be exactly that, an evolution. As the layers of capability come along, 3 to 4G was much more of a monolithic build. Let's rip and replace the whole thing. Let's go to 4G. Whereas I think, especially with our 600 megahertz position, we've got the capacity. We can take a much more thoughtful view as to kind of how to evolve the capability as the 5G applications come along and as they're proven. You know, bear in mind that, in the scheme of the globe, Rogers, and in fact, the entire Canadian industry is only a few points of the global turnover in telecom. More than ever, I think our job is to look closely at what's happening in different parts of the world and find the right partners in terms of technology. We've done that with our cable business and being a partner of Comcast and really driving the Xfinity platform. And we'll do the same thing in the different application areas around 5G. We'll watch carefully what's happening in Europe, in the U.S., and really figure out, when is the right time for us to jump in. So that more evolutionary approach, I think, will give us a much smoother wireless CapEx intensity.
And moving to the cable side, I guess let's start with video, and then we can talk about broadband more in terms of, it seems like it's getting more importance, but video is still a key driver and a big focus. Can you talk about what you're seeing in the video landscape competitively and then how the X1 trials are going and then the eventual launch and what advantages that gives you versus the current competitive positioning?
Sure. Well, first of all, we're really happy with our what we call Ignite TV. It's the Xfinity IP version, the latest version from Comcast. Really happy with the way it's going. We surpassed 100,000 subscribers in Q1, and our goal is to migrate our entire base over the next few years. And that will be done sort of in a thoughtful, stepwise fashion to make sure that we continue to maintain the benefits that we're seeing as a whole. So we're seeing three types of benefits so far in the March towards the full replacement of our legacy solutions and systems. Number one is a very significant lift in average revenue per household. Just because content discovery, content consumption is so much easier, right? So much easier. I see it in my own household, right? I used to get mad at my kids when they would go to some other platform to buy a movie, and I said, "You're taking money out of Rogers," and therefore, and now I kind of watch the behavioral change with Ignite TV. Like, it's Discovery, the voice command is a lot easier to use as a whole, and when showing up in ARPA. The second thing we're seeing is our net promoter score is up dramatically. Right? It is just a great product, a great interface as a whole. Third thing we're seeing is early lifecycle churn is down dramatically. So the churn that you would see in the first 6 months of getting a video customer on legacy versus our new solution. So, you know, I think those are all the right fundamental metrics to keep kind of driving at as a whole. And then with it, of course, you know, the CPE footprint is fundamentally different, right? The average home is closer to $400 of capital in terms of installation and CPE, whereas the legacy home was closer to $1,100 as a whole. So on all levels, this is the right solution from a customer point of view and from the fundamentals of our business as a whole. So we're very pleased with it. The most exciting part of all of it is the roadmap that's ahead. I think we've future-proofed our business from a roadmap point of view. We don't have to kind of keep scrambling for the next idea that might come along and say, I wonder how we're going to deliver on that idea. I mean, there are, you know, 10,000-plus engineers sitting in Philadelphia at Comcast that have put together a roadmap that I think is very compelling around video, around the connected home, around home security, around the ability to curate and stream OTT services, around electronic storefronts, and keep going, right? So I really am quite excited about what we're doing already. But if you look forward at the capability drops over the next couple of years, I think it'll continue to drive the value proposition. And fundamentally, we're a broadband business. We're a broadband business, and all of our economics and growth are going to come from broadband. Right? Broadband revenue was up 7% in Q1. It's 15 straight quarters of penetration growth. Despite our biggest competitor having spent a lot of money on fiber to the prem, in the last 8 years, we continue to drive internet penetration. We've got leading internet capability of DOCSIS across our entire footprint, 1 gigabit per second DOCSIS capability across 4.4 million homes. You couple that with the excitement around Ignite TV and the connected home where it can bring us, I think it's a very powerful combination. And the economics of the business are tuned that, you know, all we have to do is keep driving the economics of broadband, and we become almost indifferent to the economics of the video business. Video becomes a reason for customers to choose us, a reason to add value to the broadband connection, but the economics are all going to come from driving that ARPU and then driving costs out of the business and increasing the cash margins.
And to unpackage that a little bit, in terms of the kind of upgrade or the roadmap, I assume part of that is because you waited for the IPTV version of the X1 platform for Ignite TV versus the previous version. Does that make it easier to just kind of software upgrade, not having to reinstall or change out CPE, and that makes it a very cost-efficient way to enhance service? And then kind of traditionally, I think churn has been created by the bills getting too large, or bill shock, call it. But this seems to be changing the discussion a little bit in terms of functionality and ease of use and convenience. Are you seeing that in the trials?
100%. I mean, the whole point of going to IPTV was to stay on that future roadmap and not be sort of a generation behind in terms of where it was going. And then there's all kinds of economic benefits in the CP, as you mentioned. And also, as we move our network to more of an all-IP, a hybrid fiber coax network, a passive network, it will allow us to, you know, reform some of that capacity and spectrum that sits in our coax network as a whole, but also take a lot of the complexities out, you know, a lot of the amplifiers and other devices that sit underground throughout the entire network. So the full IP version of where we're going is a far more cost-effective plant for us as a company. And on the customer side, you're bang on. The customer side, there is an excitement factor around all the stuff that's there. And you'll see us move to a place where we give customers more choice. I mean, the cable business on video grew up where, you know, more channels, more services was better, right? And the new consumer is completely the opposite. More choice is better. You'll see us do things like, you know, let's just sell the playoffs. I mean, if you're a basketball fan and you haven't subscribed to our sports service, maybe you just want to watch the Raptors to the playoffs, and we'll sell that as a package, which would be a very entertaining kind of show right now.
Right? Yeah.
Or you might want to buy just an episode of something, or just, you know, so just creating that flexibility and that choice, mm-hmm. I think will just help to bring more customers back to a mode where they can graze TV services as they see fit.
And not feel
like they're kind of being held to mm-hmm. buying a bunch of channels they don't watch. So we see it going in that direction. And the key is to tune the business so that it actually supports that value proposition and enhances the lifetime value of the broadband service around it.
And let's hit that before we run out of time. The broadband service continues to do really well, both in penetration, but it seems like also in speed. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you mentioned the 1 gigabit capability, but where that goes over time, and then kind of where are consumers and how are they migrating, whether it's speed or usage up?
Sure. Well, first, I think it's important to bear in mind that for about the last 6 or 8 years in new developments, new condos, new single-family homes, and don't forget population growth and housing starts in Canada have been growing by about 2% per year. We've been running fiber to the prem. So we have a bit of a hybrid network that goes on. And so all that construction growth I talked about is all fiber to the prem or fiber to the basement of the condo and then, you know, a connection to each suite. Second thing I'd say is DOCSIS roadmap is still very encouraging. The time we've spent with Cable Labs, you know, we've got confidence that 1 gig will lead eventually to 10 gig full duplex. Along the way, there'll be some, you know, evolutions to 3 or 4 gigabits per second, much more of an uplink capability, et cetera. So I think there's still a lot of room on the path on coax. I mean, it's still a far superior technology than copper as a whole, and therefore we can be more success-based in our investments and kind of notch up our capability as we're more successful with penetration and up-tiering customers. The majority of our base roughly is in the 100 megabits per second range. Think of it that way. There's not a lot above 250 right now, but, you know, the majority is like 100 megabits or less. So we still feel we have a lot of headroom in the current technology. And then when you add to it where DOCSIS is going, there's a lot of life left in this. Along the way, we'll keep looking at other opportunities and technologies. We'll keep pushing more fiber into node segmentation. And don't forget, our entire network is already fiber-fed, right? Fiber-fed to the node as a whole. And we'll look at fixed wireless as we believe the technology is ready for prime time.
And then just to end with CapEx spend on the cable side, how should we think about it? Steady, coming down, kind of?
I think you look at it as coming down. We've been through a very, you know, I would say if you wanted to put a label on the cable business in the last little while, you put the label under construction, kind of like a website under construction. We've been making the investments in product and capability. We've been making the investments in proactive maintenance. We've been making the investments in tools for our workforce, et cetera. And we've hit, you know, CapEx levels of 30% plus. You're going to see that moderate in the next few years ahead. We think our resting heart rate, our resting CapEx intensity is somewhere in the low 20s. And the next few years, you'll see us get there. And you'll see a considerable growth in cash margins as we continue to drive Internet ARPU up, drive a better set of services in video and other areas that continue to drive lifetime value, taking cost out and therefore having a much better complexion to this business in the next few years ahead.
Great. I think that's it.